So if you would, go ahead and open to Leviticus chapter 12, and we're going to try to hit a few chapters this evening. God, we thank you that we can be here. Thank you for the opportunity to be here. And even in, you know, somewhat rough weather, it's just good to get out. It's good to be gathered together. Good to meet with the saints. Good to sit down together and enjoy one another's company. Good to open your word together. And Lord, you know this, I don't have to tell you this, but one of my favorite things, God, as we gather together, I just love the conversations that happen before and the conversations that are generated from the text and from the context of the discussion through the evening. We thank you for that. Really, we're so grateful that we can meet together, Jesus, and talk about you. And learn more about you and learn one from another. Thank you for the various gifts represented in the church. Glenda and I were just talking about this before we started. Thank you for the way you gift certain people, and you gift everybody to do something. But the certain gifts you provided for the equipping, the edifying of the saints, that we might all come into a more perfect, mature, complete man or woman of God, more efficiently prepared, equipped to do your work in the world. We never want it to just be what happens in the four walls of our little church. It's a good starting point for discipleship, but Lord, you intend for us to live this outside. So in that, for tonight, we just commit ourselves to you, commit the study of your word. Our hearts and minds we lay before you. Our lives we lay before you. May we be quick with that, at the ready to be submitted to you. So again, for this evening, would you bless our time? It's already a blessing to be here. Further bless it as we get into the Bible. In Jesus' name, amen. So, well, let's just get after it. If you've ever read the book of Leviticus, I appreciate you guys coming tonight, right? I mean, there's some things that are kind of like, let's just keep going and see how much sense we can make of this. Chapter 12 is one of those kind of funny chapters. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, if a woman has conceived and born a male child, then she shall be unclean 7 days, one full week. As in the days of her customary impurity, she shall be unclean." I'm going to just suggest really quickly a couple of things. Number one, a lot of this is super practical. Okay, just super practical, as is so much of this. Secondly, of course, as we just consider the scriptures, Genesis chapter 1, of course, as God made man and woman into chapters 1 and 2, they were to be fruitful and multiply. So this is always, children are always a blessing from the Lord. I mean, this is Psalm 127 that we find children are a heritage of the Lord. They are a reward, essentially, from Him. So this is all blessing, and there's practical things to this. So again, this customary impurity, and she shall be clean for 7 days, that 1 week. On the eighth day, the flesh of his foreskin shall be circumcised. Side note there, this brings to mind, of course, for me, the Apostle Paul, if you remember in the book of Philippians, when he was kind of giving his, what's the word I want for this, almost his resume, right, for what a great Pharisee he was back in the day. And he mentions this, that on the eighth day he was circumcised. Like, okay, well, obviously, Paul, when you're 8 days old, you really didn't have a lot of say-so into anything that was happening. What, you just screamed like the rest of us because you were hungry, right? So, like, what does he mean by that? It's amazing because what he's saying, even his heritage was godly. His parents did stuff according to the law. So, this is part of the law. On the eighth day, he shall be circumcised. Verse 4, she shall then continue in the blood of her purification 33 days. So I'm doing the math here. Call that 40 days. You guys with me on that, right? She shall not touch any hallowed thing. Notice that word hallowed, sacred, consecrated, right? Nor come into the sanctuary until the days of her purification are fulfilled. But if she bears a female child, notice this, then she shall be unclean 2 weeks. So kind of bonus week there. As in her customary impurity, and she shall continue in the blood of her purification 66 days, which is twice as many. I'm a genius here, right? Twice as many as the 33 days for a male child. I will just say that it doesn't really tell us why. I'm going to talk about some other specific practicals here, but I'm going to give you kind of my best guess, which is then going to be less than the equivalent of my opinion. It's the best guess that I can muster, and kind of there's certain things where the scriptures are silent. It's okay to be silent. Once again, it's okay to not have an opinion, but here I am, so I'm going to give you just at least a snippet of what I think this might be in just a moment. So 66 days, verse 6. When the days of her purification are fulfilled, whether for a son or a daughter, she shall bring to the priest a lamb of the first year as a burnt offering, and a young pigeon or a turtle dove as a sin offering to the door of the tabernacle of meeting. So those two offerings. Then he shall offer it before the Lord and make atonement for her, and she shall be clean from the flow of her blood. This is the law of her who has borne a male or a female. And if she is not able to bring a lamb, and again, here we have the room provided for those that have very little or are poor, then she may bring two turtle doves or two young pigeons, one as a burnt offering, again, that would be a consecration offering, and the other as a sin offering. Notice those two things again, those two sacrifices. Consecration offering, burnt offering, and a sin offering. So the priest shall make atonement for her, and she will be clean. Like, okay, what do we do with this? Again, I'm going to suggest super practical. A bunch of the super practical stuff is this. You know what moms love to have? Some seclusion after a baby's born. Just some quiet time. And we tend to look at this kind of stuff like unclean, like, ugh, you know, like in some kind of almost weird spiritual way, like she's totally unclean. Is it possible that this is that practical that God says, you know what young moms need, what brand new moms need, what they just need some time away from everybody? Oh. I wonder if it's that practical that God says, actually, I'm going to build this into the law that she will have room for extra rest. Having said that, there's that category, and I'm going to stick with this. The other thing would be, notice again that these two offerings, there's the consecration offering, this burnt offering, as the mom then is consecrating herself and no doubt the child to a great degree to the Lord, but also the sin offering. Well, is it sin that she got? No, of course not. We already mentioned that from the book of Genesis, from Psalm 127, etc. This is definitely a blessing from God. Almost the 50-50 of this is, what a blessing, and another sinner just entered the world. You know, like, well, it's just a cute little baby. Well, is the baby's crying? Is the diaper need? No, I just changed the diaper. Is the baby hungry? No, I just fed the baby. Is the baby, you know, fever or anything? No. Sometimes babies just cry because they're little balls of sin, right? they're just human beings that are demanding attention. Interesting. So there's a sin offering for this. As we'll see in the next few chapters, God's people were to be cleansed from, and I'll just say this, man, there's part of this that it's tough to read on your own. Read the Bible, right? But it's tougher to stand up here and read a lot of these things to you. But God's people, again, as we'll see in the next few chapters, were to be cleansed from bodily fluids, bodily secretions. Those are fantastic words for the evening. But for this, again, you know, for these new moms, time for them to be clean. Maybe it's just time for them to really recover and be clean. And we'll see some of the details of that in a couple chapters further. But anyone who might be, what about this? Someone else that might be sick and doesn't realize that they're sick and they come around mom, well, that's not a healthy thing either. So maybe she just needs to stay away from everyone. Yeah, and maybe people need to stay away from her and the baby. Like, what kind of care would they have in terms of infant care back in the day? In most cultures throughout history, the baby's fatality rate, mortality rate is pretty low. Am I saying this all wrong? A lot of babies died early in a lot of cultures. And so again, they were to be separate, and none of these diseases will come upon you if you'll just do what I've set before you to do. So again, part of this is faith. Well, how come I can't see the baby? Because mom needs some time. So a little bit of distance would have further ensured the health of both mom and the new baby. Again, no reason that I can see why moms had twice as much time early on with their daughters. But it's also possible that not just the time of rest and recovery and being clean and just kind of finishing everything that needs to happen with a new mom, is it entirely possible that the Lord just says, you know what? Moms and brand new babies need time to bond. What a beautiful thing. And God knows that too. And I'm just going to give them time. And a daughter with a mom, that's a different relationship. And I'm going to give them twice as much time. Leave mom alone. She needs some time with the baby. I wonder if it's that practical. That's my guess, which is not even quite my opinion, but I would lean towards that as my opinion. Do what you want with it. Probably, you know, this for dads as well, they just need to give their bride some of that time and some time to rest. What else about this? I just have a handful of notes with this. And it talked about this, pregnancy, not sin, sex and marriage, not sin. We've been seeing that in the book of Colossians. But again, people are sinners, so therefore sacrifices were required. What else? Moms need rest, talked about that. Bodies need time to recover. New dads need to let their wives recover. And oh, by the way, this is what's so fascinating to me about it. As you approach this in a practical way, some of the things we've seen, you know, even earlier on in the book of Leviticus and some of the laws of Moses, you know, someone's like working in the field and accidentally gets killed, that's not manslaughter, so there's some kind of fee that they have to pay, but they're not, you know, facing death for that. And I've talked about this, right? You see these road work signs, you ever travel? Like if you hit someone, it's a $10,000 fine. Like you just killed a road worker, $10,000 fine. It's a dangerous job, so you didn't mean to kill them, but you need to be paying attention. You don't want to pay a $10,000 fine, nor do you want on your conscience that you accidentally killed a guy. So that's not manslaughter. So I wonder about this even. We see this today in most every civilized nation. It's called maternity leave. Like, what is this chapter? It's maternity leave. Like, God was way ahead of the curve. And I wonder if modern civilized nations go, actually, that's a great idea. Maybe brand new moms don't need to go immediately back to work. And maybe dads need a little bit of extra time, too. And quite frankly, in America, most people think that there should be more time, more maternity leave. And quite frankly, there probably should be. At any rate, there's still the spiritual aspect of this. And I love that, the consecration, the burnt offering to the Lord. That's all I got for this short chapter. Chapter 13, we're going to now look at some laws regarding leprosy. Verse 1, and the Lord spoke to Moses. And please note the repetition of that throughout. This is from the Lord to Moses to give to the people. This is how I want you to live. Verse 2, when a man has on the skin of his body a swelling, a scab, or a bright spot. Aren't you glad you came tonight, everybody at home? Like you did the right thing, you know, like it's raining. And it becomes on the skin of his body like a leprous sore, then he shall be brought to Aaron the priest or to one of his sons, the priests. The priest shall examine the sore on the skin of his body. And you'll notice that the priests were providing this care. You know, there wasn't the doctor kind of a hospital system. The priests who had this specific information were to be the ones that took care of this. So the priest will examine the sore. And if the hair on the sore has turned white and the sore appears to be deeper than the skin of his body, it's a leprous sore. Then the priest shall examine him and pronounce him unclean. But, verse 4, if the bright spot is white on the skin of his body and does not appear to be deeper than the skin and its hair is not turned white, yeah, and you can put in your notes or something, this is all fairly gross stuff, right? But not turned white, then the priest shall isolate, please notice that, isolate the one who has the sore 7 days. Just be by yourself for a week. Verse 5, then the priest shall examine him on the seventh day, and indeed if the sore appears to be as it was, and the sore is not spread on the skin, then the priest shall isolate him another 7 days. Like, how's it looking? Oh, about the same. Okay, hasn't spread? No. No, sir. Okay, let's just check another 7 days here and see him then. Verse 6, the priest shall examine him again on the seventh day. And indeed, if the sore has faded and the sore has not spread on the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him clean. It's only a scab. And he shall wash his clothes and be clean. But if the scab should at all spread over the skin, after he has been seen by the priest for his cleansing, he shall be seen by the priest again. And if, verse 8, the priest sees that the scab has indeed spread on the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It is leprosy. I'll get to, in a couple minutes, just exactly what leprosy is. Some of this is going to be just general terms, kind of skin issues. Like, I've got a skin issue. Leprous? Hopefully not. Let's find out. Let's give it some time and see what it looks like. So there's different kinds of skin issues, of course. But how often do you hear something, maybe not exactly like this, but similar to this at the doctor's office? You know, you call, talk to the nurse. Okay, what seems to be the issue? This is, I actually am having an issue here, right? That's why I'm here. Okay, well, what's happening? And of course, they take a look at it, run some tests. How long has it been like this? A couple of days. Oh, when did this start exactly? You know, they're trying to get a time frame on this, similar to this. What's the time frame? They want to see how it's looking in a week. When did you first notice this? They're checking the test results, and they're checking, the, you know, they go back and they check your test results to, like, the textbook kind of, okay, this is what this looks like. It's as though doctors have every single issue memorized, you know, like they know where to look for a lot of these things. Okay, this is what's happening here. And how often have you heard this at the doctor's office? Okay, well, seems all right, but let's keep an eye on it, right? I had this some weird issue in my arm, this, I don't know, a couple years ago. I went to see the doctor for something else and kind of, man, I got this weird, like, okay. He's like stumped, like, behind my bicep or something, like, not really, is it hurt? It's just, keep an eye on it. Jeremy, if it gets worse, come back and let's try to figure out what's going on. But you hear that all the time. Well, let's keep an eye on it, and if it gets worse, let me know, or depending on what the thing is. If it gets worse, you need to have already driven yourself to the emergency room kind of thing, right? But here in chapter 13, let's keep an eye on it. And in the meantime, again, there in the middle of verse 4, towards the end of verse 4, the priest shall isolate the one who has the sore for a week. Quarantine in the meantime. Just to be safe for everybody else, because if it's leprous, hey, yeah, let's keep you away from the general population, right? Might be just some kind of weird scab, but better safe than sorry. And at the end of the day, this is more for other people. If you have it, and not much can be done for you. And in that day, well, if it was leprosy, nothing could be done for you, but let's keep others from getting it. So just what then is leprosy? Today, it's often called Hansen's disease, and there's something like 15 million people on the planet that have it. And most of it's like in super undeveloped countries and whatnot. And I want to say it's something like annually, maybe 200 people in the United States of America have it. Some of you guys remember, like, was it in Hawaii, one of the Hawaiian islands, like there was a leper's colony, and there was a couple major like leper's colonies in the United States, and those have been completely shut down. We just don't need that anymore. But leprosy can lead to nerve damage. It can actually affect respiratory system, can do damage to the skin and the eyes. It can spread person to person, but there typically needs to be kind of extensive contact for that to happen. There's your happy things about leprosy for the evening. I didn't realize this, but today it can be cured. Like, there's certain combinations of drugs that can manage and heal leprosy. But one of the bigger issues with this, of course, again, the nerve issues would be it can lead to a complete loss of feeling. And you get some terrible stories, you know, someone's got leprosy and doesn't realize that they, you know, just can't feel anything, and they walk up to a hot stove and they don't realize that they're touching a hot stove, and so severe damage comes from that. Maybe not so much the leprosy initially, but all these different things. So at any rate, there's your happy thought about that. So again, though, notice the person is checked there in verse 8. We read that. And if it turns out to be leprosy, verse 9, when the leprous sore is on a person, then he shall be brought to the priest, and the priest shall examine him. And if indeed the swelling on the skin is white, and it has turned the hair white, and there is a spot of raw flesh in the swelling, because it can do some terrible things to the skin, it's an old leprosy on the skin of his body, the priest shall pronounce him unclean and shall not isolate him, for he is unclean. And if leprosy breaks out all over the skin, and leprosy covers all the skin of the one who has the sore from his head to his foot, wherever the priest looks, then the priest shall consider, and indeed if the leprosy has covered all his body, he shall pronounce him clean who has the sore. It has turned white, he is clean. So dig into this as much as you'd like, and dig into some commentaries to kind of get a sense of what's happening, which way, coming and going. Did they have it? Do they not have it? What else might this be? Kind of, it's what type is it? And by it, I mean, what type of skin issue is this? And none of this for the priest would be based on guesswork. Like, this is really specific stuff. So the priest is like, yeah, it's over there in 3rd Moses, right? It's right in the law. And they would look into this and kind of see exactly what's happening, thus the careful examination throughout this whole time. Very specific checks were done, careful observation was happening, but which type of leprosy or which type of skin issue? There's, you know, eczema can look very much like leprosy, interestingly enough. So is it that? Is it just some kind of painful skin issue that's not actually leprous? They needed to be sure. So if it breaks out all over the body, again, verse 13, the priest shall examine him. But, verse 14, when raw flesh appears on him, he shall be unclean, and the priest shall examine the raw flesh and pronounce him be unclean, for the raw flesh is unclean. It is leprosy. Or if the raw flesh changes and turns white again, he shall come to the priest, and the priest shall examine him. And indeed, if the sore has turned white, then the priest shall pronounce him clean. Who has the sore? He's clean. If the body develops a boil in the skin and it's healed, then in the place of the boil there comes a white swelling or a bright spot, reddish white, then it is to be shown to the priest. I wonder if there's like skin doctors that are just like, yeah, they can tell you all about this, right? Verse 20, and if when the priest sees it, it indeed appears deeper than the skin and its hair has turned white, the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It's a leprous sore which has broken out of the boil, but if the priest examines it, and indeed there are no white hairs in it, and is not deeper than the skin, but has faded, notice that, not deeper than the skin, then the priest shall isolate him 7 days, and if it should all spread over the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It's a leprous sore, but, and the priests, they need to know this stuff. The bright spot stays in one place and is not spread, scar of the boil, and the priest shall pronounce him clean. It's just a scar, you're okay. If the body receives a burn on its skin by fire, and the raw flesh of the burn becomes a bright spot, reddish white or white, then the priest shall examine it. Indeed, if the hair of the bright spot is turned white and appears deeper than the skin, it's leprosy broken out in the burn. Therefore, the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It's a leprous sore. But if the priest examines it, and indeed there are no white hairs in the bright spot, and is not deeper than the skin, but is faded, then the priest shall isolate him, further quarantine, another week. The priest shall examine him on the 7th day. If it is all spread over the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him unclean. It's a leprous sore. You following all this? You guys like keeping score for all these things? By the way, a quick note here with this. The time spent away, again, to keep other people safe, and it would further provide, the time would further provide or give allowance for an accurate diagnosis. You know, like, come and see me tomorrow. Okay. There might not be much change. A week, let's take a look at this thing. And another week from that, let's take a look at this. Check this out. I'm going to read to you guys just a quick note from a commentary on this passage that was written recently. This is from 2004. Okay, commentary on this section, just about two sentences, 2004. These judgments were based on sound medical diagnosis and concern. They were made more with the idea of protecting the community from the outbreak of disease than with the idea of the rights of the individual. We don't tend to like that. But that's exactly what was happening here. Well, I should be free to go out and... You might have leprosy, thank you very much. We'd like you to stay home for a week and let's get you checked in another week. So this isn't like any COVID coronavirus kind of... This is 2004. No, and I'll read this again. They were made more with the idea of protecting the community from the outbreak of disease than with the idea of the rights of the individual. As in, you'll be okay for a week. Let's make sure that you don't spread whatever you have to everybody else. Interesting. So the seventh day, he'll examine this. And again, if it's deeper, if it's not deeper than the skin, and then verse 33, he shall shave himself, but the scale he shall not shave. And so there needs to be some kind of comparison. And the priest shall isolate the one who has the scale another 7 days. On the seventh day, the priest shall examine the scale. If the scale is not spread over the skin, it does not appear deeper than the skin, then the priest shall pronounce him clean. He shall wash his clothes and be clean. You guys keeping track again? Verse 35, but if the scale should at all spread over the skin after his cleansing, came back, then the priest shall examine him, and if indeed the scale has spread over the skin, the priest shall not seek for yellow hair. He is unclean, but if the scale appears to be at a standstill, and there is black hair grown up in it, the scale has healed, he is clean, and the priest shall pronounce him clean. Continuing, verse 38, if a man or a woman has bright spots on the skin of the body, specifically white bright spots, then the priest shall look. Indeed, if the bright spots on the skin of the body are dull white, it's a white spot that grows on the skin, he is clean. As for the man whose hair has fallen from his head, this is one of my life verses. He is bald, but he is clean. Amen. He is bald, but he is clean.
And hot.
Wow, thank you so much. I'll talk to you afterwards. Verse 41, he whose hair has fallen from his forehead, he is bald on the forehead, he's clean. If there is on the bald head or bald forehead, a reddish-white sore, it's leprosy breaking out on his bald head or his bald forehead. Just stop it, you guys. Verse 43, then the priest shall examine it, and indeed if the swelling of the sore is reddish-white on his bald head or his bald forehead, and I love that I get to read bald like eight times right here, as the appearance of leprosy on the skin of the body, he's a leprous man, he is unclean, the priest shall surely pronounce him unclean, his sore is on his head, now the leper on whom the sore is, his clothes shall be torn and his head bare, and he shall cover his mustache and cry, unclean, unclean. This was now his civic duty. You need to stay away from me. I'm not clean. I don't want you to get sick. Look at that. End of verse 5. And cry. What is... doesn't say, and say. And make mention. And cry. Unclean! Oh, I was going to go up and say, unclean! I'll just yell across the street to you, you know, kind of thing. He shall be unclean. All the days he has the sore, he shall be unclean. He is unclean, and he shall dwell alone. His dwelling shall be outside the camp. We need to not get other people sick. It's interesting. So again, the priest there trying to ascertain what the skin issue was. They needed to be certain which kind of skin issue was happening. Let's just all say it together. He's bald, but he's clean. Super important. So lots of specific things. Maybe doesn't make for the most exciting kind of reading, but I'll tell you what, back in the day, this was critical kind of stuff, and critical especially for the people of Israel, because guess what? None of the Gentile people around them had any of this. So they just got real sick, and they passed on disease after disease after disease, and a lot of them died. And we talked about this last week, you know, in the bubonic plague, where so much, it was like a quarter of the population of Europe died, but in the Jewish communities, not so much, because they were extra sanitary. Their hygienic practices were, well, this. What are we supposed to do? Stay clean. Well, there's a dead mouse in the... most people, it's fine. Jewish people, get rid of the dish. I don't know why, but we need to get rid of the dish, because the Lord... Well, what's the big deal? I don't know, but the Lord. And fast forward, and we're like, yeah, because you're going to get real sick. Don't eat bats. We pretty much understand that in our day and age, right? Practical. Then it gets real practical here in verses 47, basically to the end of the chapter. The discussion is largely about leprosy in garments. So again, leprosy, this might be more general terms of, is this like a mold or a fungus in the garment, in your clothes? Also, if a garment has a leprous plague in it, some of your translations might render it something different, might just say a mold or a fungus or some kind of infestation. Does someone have something similar to that? Not necessarily leprous. That's the concept. So whether it's in the warp or the woof, those are words we don't use very often. The best I understand for the warp and the woof, this is threads running lengthwise and crosswise, and I couldn't tell you which one was which. I don't really remember. It's kind of like latitude and longitude for clothing. Just go with that. So it's the warp or the woof of linen or wool, whether in leather or in anything made of leather. And if the plague is greenish or reddish in the garment or in the leather, whether in the warp or in the woof, or if anything made of leather, it's a leper's plague and shall be shown to the priest. The priest shall examine the plague and isolate that which has the plague 7 days. Let's take a look at this thing for a week. And he shall examine the plague on the 7th day. If the plague has spread in the garment, it's gotten worse, either in the warp or the woof, the leather or anything made of leather, the plague is an active leprosy, an active mold, an active kind of a fungus, it, the garment, is unclean. He shall therefore burn that garment in which is the plague, whether warp or woof, in wool or linen or anything of leather, for it is an active leprosy, the garment shall be burned in the fire. Just, what do I do with it? Burn it, right? It's interesting what's happening here. Today, you know, you get something on your clothing, something kind of weird. Like, what is that? What is that on my clothing? There are certain things where you just kind of like, it's fine. There's other things like, does someone have a paper towel? And you get the paper towel wet and like, okay, it looks good. Other things like, yeah, you take that home and you wash it 3 times and you add bleach and not just like scalding. You add boiling water. Let's clean this garment. And you guys, you probably had, you know, doing some kind of job, and like you look at your T-shirt, like, yeah, no, I'm never going to, that's not even going to Goodwill, right? I'm just, that just goes in the trash, or we have a bonfire, stand back, is that just never wear that thing again, because whatever is on it, no one ever needs to touch that again. And so the fire, you know, chuck it in the bin. No, chuck it in the fire is probably the best answer. So burn in the fire. But, verse 53, if the priest examines it, indeed the plague is not spread in the garment, either in the warp or in the woof or anything made of leather, then the priest shall command that they wash the thing in which is the plague. He shall isolate it another 7 days. The priest shall examine the plague after it has been washed, and indeed if the plague has not changed its color, therefore, or though the plague has not spread, it is unclean. You shall burn it in the fire. It continues eating away, whether the damage is outside or inside. And again, this is so practical. I mean, that rubs up against something else in your house. And now, thank you very much. And we'll get to some of this in the next few paragraphs or so. But you get to, those things rub off on the next thing. And now you got some kind of weird mold that was just on my garment. And now it's on other stuff. Or I sat down at the table. And now there's something weird growing on the table. Yeah. Because you didn't bother to check your garments to see, that's no big deal. I don't have time to bring it to the priest. Okay, best of luck to you, right? Verse 57, I think. If it appears again in the garment, either in the warp or in the woof, or anything made of leather, spreading plague, you shall burn with fire that in which is the plague. And if you wash the garment, warp or woof, or whatever is made of leather, if the plague has disappeared from it, then it shall be washed a second time, wisdom, and shall be clean. This is the law of the leprous plague in a garment of wool or linen, either in the warp or woof, or in anything made of leather, to pronounce it clean or to pronounce it unclean. I'm not sure what this is. Better safe than sorry. They would go and check with the priest. Chapter 14 is one of those interesting chapters, like based on everything that happens there in chapter 13, kind of a long chapter dealing with all these leprous kinds of issues, molds and whatnot. Specifically, though, leprous, this is a really fascinating chapter, again, because so much of what was happening, there was only so much that you could do. Chapter 14 says, then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, this shall be the law of the leper for the day of his cleansing. He shall be brought to the priest. And if the priest shall go out of the camp, and the priest, shall go out of the camp, and the priest shall examine him, and indeed, if the leprosy is healed in the leper, then the priest shall command to take for him who is to be cleansed two living and clean birds, cedar wood, scarlet, and hyssop. What's fascinating about this, up until modern times, there was no cure for leprosy. The discussion here is about those people that have been cleansed of leprosy. How would they be cleansed from something for which there's no cleansing? How indeed? So the priest, verse 5, shall command that one of the birds be killed in an earthen vessel over running water. As for the living bird, he shall take it, the cedar wood and the scarlet and the hyssop, and dip them and the living bird in the blood of the bird that was killed over the running water. And he shall sprinkle it 7 times on him who is to be cleansed from the leprosy, and shall pronounce him clean, and shall let the living bird loose in the open field. He who is to be cleansed shall wash his clothes, shave off all his hair, and wash himself in water, that he may be clean. So any kind of residue on the skin or hair or anything, just remove all of it. Make sure it's all clean. Make sure it's all removed. And after that, he shall come into the camp and shall stay outside his tent 7 days. But on the 7th day, he shall shave all the hair off his head and his beard and his eyebrows, and he'll still be clean, right? Even though he's bald at that point. Thank you. All his hair he shall shave off. He shall wash his clothes and wash his body in water, and he shall be clean. On the 8th day, he shall take 2 male lambs without blemish, 1 ewe lamb of the first year without blemish, 3/10 of an ephah of fine flour mixed with oil as a grain offering, and 1 log of oil. And the priest who makes him clean shall present the man who is to be made clean and those things before the Lord at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. Pause here. Matthew chapter 8, if you'd like to turn there. Let me just read a quick little section from Matthew's Gospel. Matthew chapter 8. I'm super proud of you guys for sticking with me so far with all of this. Chapter 8, Matthew's Gospel, verses 1 through 4. When he, Jesus, had come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. It's already more exciting reading, isn't it? Verse 2, and behold, a leper came and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Then Jesus put out his hand and touched him, saying, I am willing. Notice this word, immediately his leprosy was clean. Did Jesus touch a leper? Or as him touching him, immediately the leprosy is gone. So actually, no, he just healed a freshly cleansed ex-leper. Did he actually touch a leper or instantly healed? And Jesus said to him, see that you tell no one. Again, at this point in Jesus' earthly ministry, he needed to kind of keep the press clippings kind of on the down low. But go your way, show yourself to the priest. Right? This is the law of Moses. Go to that and offer the gift that Moses commanded as a testimony to them. It's probably not an exaggeration to say that the priests, that they had never needed to reference this chapter here in Leviticus. Leviticus chapter 14 is like, well, you need to know it. Okay. They probably memorized it. Like, hey, have you ever? Nope. Have you ever heard of anyone? Well, I think like my great-great-grandpa told some story, but I don't know if that's true. They had never really needed to do anything practically with this chapter. Interesting. In fact, there's only so many recorded cases in the Old Testament of people being healed of this terrible disease. One, of course, one of those people, Gentile, healed of leprosy. So again, a lot of this stuff is super practical. Verse 12 is where we left off back here in Leviticus 14. The priest shall take 1 male lamb and offer it as a trespass offering, the log of oil, and wave them as a wave offering before the Lord. We've talked about a lot of these offerings. He shall kill the lamb in the place where he kills the sin offering and the burnt offering in a holy place, for the sin offering is the priest's, so is the trespass offering. It's most holy. The priest shall take some of the blood of the trespass offering. The priest shall put it on the tip of the right ear of him who is to be cleansed, the thumb, big toe of his right foot. The priest shall take some of the log of oil, pour it into the palm of his own left hand. The priest shall dip it in his right finger in the oil that's on the left hand. He shall sprinkle some of the oil with his finger 7 times before the Lord. The rest of the oil in his hand, the priest shall put some on the tip of the right ear of him who is to be cleansed, on the thumb of his right hand, big toes, right foot, the blood of the trespass offering, etc. Verse 18, the rest of the oil that's in the priest's hand he shall put on the head of him who is to be cleansed, so the priest shall make atonement for him before the Lord. And the priest shall offer the sin offering and make atonement for him who is to be cleansed from his uncleanness. Afterward, he shall kill the burnt offering. So again, so much of this, there's not as much need to, you know, cover every detail since we've looked at so much of this in previous chapters. Verse 20, the priest shall offer the burnt offering and the grain offering on the altar, and he shall make atonement for him. He'll be clean. But if he's poor and cannot afford it, he shall take one male lamb as a trespass offering to make atonement for him, one tenth of an ephah of fine flour mixed with oil as a grain offering, log of oil, two turtle doves, two young pigeons, such as he can afford. One shall be a sin offering, the other a burnt offering. He shall bring them to the priest on the eighth day for his cleansing at the door of tabernacle meeting before the Lord. Verse 24, then the priest shall take the lamb of the trespass offering, log of oil, and the priest shall wave them as a wave offering before the Lord. He shall kill the lamb of the trespass offering, and the priest shall take some of the blood of the trespass offering and put it on the tip of the right ear of him who is to be cleansed, the thumb, big toe, etc. The priest shall pour some of the oil into the palm of his own left hand, shall sprinkle with the right finger the oil that's on his left hand seven times before the Lord. Verse 28, the priest shall put some of the oil right ear, etc. Verse 29, the rest of the oil that's in the priest's hand shall be put on the head of him who's to be cleansed to make atonement for him before the Lord. And again, that at-one-ment, right? And being, you're okay now, you're clean. This is someone that was removed from the camp. Can you imagine the joy that this person would experience? So I can see my family again? You are cleansed. The atonement has been made. You can come and see. Well, but more important than my family? Well, more important than family. Family's everything. More importantly, I can come before the Lord. You can come before the Lord. And I get to see my family? And you get to see your family. You get to see your friends again. Atonement has been made. So they'll offer the turtle doves or the young pigeons, such as he can afford, such as he's able to afford, sin offering, the burnt offering, the grain offering, atonement. Verse 32, this is the law for one who had a leprous sore, who cannot afford the usual cleansing. Where it gets real practical is this lengthy section from verses 33 all the way to verse 57. I'll read it. So we do around here. Good to have you guys. It's actually an interesting thing. I'd really encourage you guys to do this on your own personal Bible study. Get to a passage that's kind of like, what's the word? How do I say this? Maybe is not quite as stirring as some other passages. You know, this is good nighttime reading if you can't. Because this is for the people of Israel. Jesus has fulfilled the law. This is super practical stuff that really does carry over into modern times. It just doesn't make for the most exciting reading. You're not hearing me say that the Word of God is boring. I'm not saying that. I'm just not. When you get to some of these passages, which is, by the way, I'm personally just enjoying my own study of Leviticus. It's like the best I've ever studied it on my own and the most enjoyment I've ever had. I would suggest when you come to these types of passages, do exactly what I'm doing right now. Read it out loud. Read it out loud. Your mind is less likely to wander when you're a little bit more involved. If you're reading it, eyes are involved and your mind is involved for a while. And then, oh, where was I? I don't know. And this is the next chapter and let's see if that's any better. When you're reading it out loud, there's words like warp and woof. You're like, oh, what's that? And you probably, as you read, how do you pronounce it? And now you're wondering what those words even mean. Further, another one of your senses is involved because you're hearing it as well. So your eyes are taking in, your mouth is reciting it, and you're hearing it even from yourself. Like, it further reinforces these passages and helps you to answer some questions that are found. It's just a suggestion, but in your own Bible study, you might just read certain passages out loud and you'll probably have a better time understanding them. And, more importantly, remembering them. So super practical stuff here, verse 33. The Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, both of them, when you've come into the land of Canaan, which I give you as a possession, I give you, not I will, I give you as a possession, and I put the leprous plague in a house in the land of your possession, and he who owns the house comes and tells the priest, saying, it seems to me that there's some plague in the house. So again, this is going to be real practical stuff here. Then the priest shall command that they empty the house, get everything out of there, before the priest goes into it to examine the plague, and all that's in the house may not be made unclean. And afterward, the priest shall go in to examine the house. So all that stuff on the warp and the woof and on your garment. So, hey, let's not leave your clothes in here. Because if there's some kind of funky stuff happening on the inside of your house, you need to get your stuff out of there so it doesn't impact everything you own. Oh. Let's just get it out of there. This is really practical. In fact, it's so practical. This was, I don't know how many years ago, but my brother-in-law, one of his side businesses, he used to, he might still do this, he did mold remediation, and he did mold remediation like in basements. You ever been to kind of a dank basement? It's like, whoa, what's that? And you just walk in, I'm in the basement now, right? And like, what's happening? And the lights are kind of flickering, you know, and like, not a well-ventilated kind of space. At any rate, he did mold remediation, and I got to go and help him with one of these jobs, and it's a long process. And most people, like, just get a spray bottle and some bleach, and a week later, just get more bleach. It's not going to help. You know, like, I added bleach, and we had to carry in all this heavy equipment. My brother-in-law calls me Germ, and he's like, Germ, here's how this works. Right, I have to charge them this much because the chemicals and whatnot, and when they see, and then no one wants to be charged what I charge them, but when they see me carrying all this big heavy equipment, like, you don't buy that on aisle 17, you know, at Walmart kind of thing, so it's expensive stuff. So the process, I don't know, half the day or so of spray, let it dry, scrape the walls. If you've ever done this, you got to scrape the walls there, because it's interesting how it connects even to the leprous sore, all those kind of things. Is it a scab, just kind of surface level, or is it below the skin? You ever had some kind of skin issue? Like, yeah, it's definitely below the skin. So when it's on your walls, like, yeah, it's definitely in the block. It's kind of in the cinder block there. It's not just the plaster. It's beyond that. Ooh, is it through the drywall? Is it in the studs? We got a big issue here. Bleach, it's not going to do anything. So scraping it, other kind of stuff on there. We had all the, you know, the equipment and everything. It's a long process. Notice, in fact, skip ahead for a second, verse 41. He shall cause the house to be scraped inside all around, and the dust that they scrape off, they shall pour out in an unclean place outside the city. Not just the camp, the city, because they're now in the land and they're building stuff. Cities are built. Like, well, it's just dust. It's covered with mold. You can't just leave the... You've got to get that out. That's a lot of work. Okay, then be really sick. Right? This is the kind of thing. Verse 42, they shall take other stones and put them in the place of those stones, and he shall take other mortar and plaster the house. So really, if you've ever had that, like with drywall, some of you guys remember when we moved into this building before we added the nice front doors, we had this massive rainstorm. Water came into the building like crazy. Like this back wall here, all the way to the kitchen counter there, the coffee bar counter. Jake, you remember this? Like how much? I think we had to take like 4 feet of drywall around, inside and out, just half, and just throw that away. It was wet. All the insulation inside there, wet. All the studs, wet. So we had to wait for those to dry and all this kind of stuff. Like, well, let's just put. No, we had to make sure that whatever we sprayed to just kill the stuff that was big to do. Anyhow, verse 36, I think back to that. They'll empty the house. Then he'll examine, verse 37, the plague. If the plague's on the walls of the house with ingrained streaks, greenish or reddish, which appear to be deep in the wall, then the priest, verse 38, shall go out of the house to the door of the house and shall shut up the house 7 days. Like, please don't go in there. Please don't go in the house. Well, I just need to get some. That's why we got everything else before. Verse 39, the priest shall come again on the seventh day and look, and indeed if the plague is spread on the walls of the house, then the priest shall command that they take away the stones in which is the plague, and they shall cast them into an unclean place outside the city. They're fine. No, they're not. Get them out of there. And again, verse 41, or 40 and 41, they'll scrape the walls. Verse 42, they'll take the dust out somewhere else outside the city. Verse 43, now if the plague comes back and breaks out in the house, after he has taken away the stones, after he has scraped the house, and after it is plastered, kind of sealed anything up in there, then the priest shall come and look, and if indeed the priest has spread in the house, it's an active leprosy in the house. It, the house, is unclean. And he shall break down the house. Well, that stinks. What, my house. Various types of molds. Black mold. There's certain kinds of toxic molds, which can be really, really dangerous still today. Oh, it'll be fine. Like, we know this today. It won't be fine. You need to deal with that. You need to do something. And in that day, no one should ever live here again. Apparently, it's so deep in the house that even though removing stones, it's spread to all the stones. So it's probably going to kill you. So why would you? It's too much of a hassle to stay alive. It's cost me a lot of time to stay alive. Just tear down the house. Tear down the house. Moreover, he who goes into the house at all while it is shut up shall be unclean until evening. What were you doing in there? I just wanted to take a look. Well, you're now unclean. Let's stay over there. Verse 47, he who lies down in the house, I needed a place to sleep, shall wash his clothes, and he who eats in the house shall wash his clothes. But if the priest comes in and examines it, and indeed the plague is not spread in the house, after the house is plastered, then the priest shall pronounce the house clean. You can live here again because the plague is healed, fixed, repaired. It's gone. And he shall take to cleanse the house two birds, cedar wood, scarlet, and hyssop. Then he shall kill one of the birds in the earthen vessel over running water. And he shall take the cedar wood, the hyssop, the scarlet, living bird, dip them in the blood of the slain. So the same process there in the running water and sprinkle the house seven times. He shall cleanse the house with the blood of the bird and the running water, the living bird, the cedar wood, the hyssop, and the scarlet. Then he shall let the living bird loose outside the city in the open field and make atonement for the house. It shall be clean. This is the law for any leprous sore and scale, for the leprosy of a garment and of a house, for a swelling and a scab and a bright spot, to teach when it is unclean and when it is clean. This is the law of leprosy. Again, they were to be holy. They were to be set apart. And what does that mean? Different than everybody else? Yeah. Kept safe from various diseases. I'm going to say we're out of time tonight. We'll avoid the chapter about bodily discharges. We'll reserve that for next week. Some great reading. But since you're going to read it this week, I'll make this statement. Kind of with all these things, you know, like so much of this. Well, that's for the people of Israel. But then you look at modern scientific stuff and you go, oh, that's why they were expected to do this. And what were they to be? Not just to do. To be, they're supposed to be a light to the Gentiles. The issue with the people of Israel is like, we just want to be like everybody else. Those people are, well, I mean, they're dying left, right, and center, but they seem like whatever they thought. Like, they don't have to do all this stuff, that's why they're dying. So the people of Israel were supposed to be a light to the Gentiles, so they were supposed to help people with these kinds of, what's going on with your house? I don't know. Well, over here in our land, what we do is, meh. And the people of Israel just kind of got lazy with this stuff. And again, fast forward to now, we know scientifically this makes so much sense. You got something on my coat? Yeah, keep an eye on that. Something on my skin? Keep an eye on that. Yeah, I got some weird mold in my house? Keep an eye on that. How bad is it? You walk in, you need to not, you need to go get a hotel room. You need to not be in your house for a couple weeks until, oh, it'll be fine. No, probably not. So the Bible makes this clear. When we get to this next chapter, you know, so much of what we want from the Bible is love God and just be nice to your neighbor. It's exactly the point. Like, love God means trusting Him, having faith. Like, why do I have to do that with my garment? I like the warp and the woof of my garment. What's the big deal? God's saying, I don't want you to get sick. I love you. Then obey what I'm asking you to. But I don't understand what you're saying. You understand it. You just don't want to do it. I don't understand why I have to. Because I don't want you to get sick. Love God. Go obey Him. Love your neighbor.
don't get your neighbors sick. I'm like, yeah, there's some weird stuff, but I don't care. It's all over my garments, on my skin, whatever. How you doing, bro? What's wrong with Abram over here? I don't know. He was just hanging out with Levi, and now that they're both sick and their families, oh, that's maybe stay away for a week and see what's going on. Love God, love people. Yeah, let's do that. Super practical. When we get to this chapter, chapter 15, various bodily discharges, bodily fluids, etc. You're talking about all these molds and leprosy and all these kinds of things. They're not our typical go-to chapters of the Holy Bible. But in truth, this stuff is really all about exactly that, loving God. And in modern times, well, we'll talk about it more next week. But there's reason, I'll just say this, there's reasons that you go to any store, any restaurant, you know what they have in the back? They've got special kits to clean up things like puke, right? Just mop it up. No. One of my daughters at her job, oh, a week ago, how can I keep this super nebulous? Someone wasn't feeling very well at her job. And there was a cleanup that was needed. And so you weren't authorized, but the manager, because this is like, we need to do this the right way, because what's the big deal? Because we don't want other customers to get sick. Just mop it up or whatever. No, you go get the special kit that costs $150. It's a one-off kind of a use because you need to make sure that no one else gets sick from, oh. And it says that the Lord knew that and made sure his people, like, why do I have to wash? Because I don't want you or anyone else getting sick. Just rub some dirt on it. No. No. So it doesn't make for the happiest reading, but again, when you look at this in a practical and, dare I say it, scientific manner, this is like upper shelf genius kind of stuff. Like, companies specialize in cleanup of fluids, etc., so other people, you pay big bucks so other people don't get sick, so it's cleaned the right way. The Bible's boring. Are you kidding me? The Lord, because he's the Lord, he knows stuff. There's your takeaway from tonight. God knows stuff. God bless you guys. Keep reading. See you on Sunday. Have a great night. Great rest of your week.